friends. I'm Jackie Jean, and I make a really fun podcast about superstitions. I know, you're thinking black cats and walking under ladders, but this is a little different. I don't talk about anything that causes bad luck. I only talk about the things that make us lucky. It's an edutaining look at lucky symbols and omens that your kids will love too. Lucky Charms Unplugged is all about bringing luck into our lives. Having a bad day? A bad week? Come by, and I'll tell you all about how you can get lucky.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Londine. Hey everybody, this is Eric Carter Londine, and I am just so grateful right now for all of you who have supported me throughout the last couple of years. It's hard to believe that we're coming up on 2 years now of True Consequences. I want to say thank you. Before we get into today's episode, I need to say thanks to a bunch of people that I have neglected thanking. I need to thank Scott, Vanessa, GC, Pam E, Stevie Lee, Mac, Lab Mom, Rose, Amanda, Melissa, Rachel, Ellie, Mackenzie. So many people have bought coffees for me at ko-fi/true consequences. I am so very grateful for you. I need to say thank you to Tanya Shadle, Carla Benavides, Katie Silva, Garcia, Brittany McDaniel, Lucy Farr. All of you are patrons, new patrons. Thank you so much. I appreciate you and everything that you have done to contribute to this show staying live, staying on the air. Without you, this wouldn't be possible. So thank you very much. Today's episode is a very difficult one. I drove down to Clovis, New Mexico to meet with Miss Frances Williams, who is the mom of Shakaya Williams. Shakaya was gunned down in the living room of her mother's home while her children watched helplessly and her mother tried desperately to get help from the authorities. And even though it's been nearly 9 months now, there still hasn't been any charges pressed against the individuals responsible for Shakaya's death. And the worst part is, the Williams family know who is responsible for Shakaya's murder. I'm going to be linking the petition on change.org in the show notes so that you can sign it and share it. And hopefully we can get the DA's attention and get them to press charges against those responsible for murdering Shakaya Williams. I'm Eric Carter Londine, and this is True Consequences. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of True Consequences. I'm your host, Eric Carter Londine, and today, True Consequences is on the road. I am in Clovis, New Mexico, and I'm visiting with a family of a murder victim that is still seeking justice here in Clovis. So I'm hoping that when we get to the call of action here at the end of this episode, you folks will do what you do and help get this family some justice. So if you don't mind, would you introduce yourself to my listeners?
My name is Frances Williams.
Okay, Ms. Williams, and why are you here today?
Because I'm seeking justice for my daughter, Shakaya Marie Williams.
And before we go into what happened to Shakaya, let's talk about Shakaya and who she was as a person and what she meant to you.
Well, she's my second child of four. My only daughter, she was my right-hand female. She was spoiled rotten. She was funny. She was a fighter. She was the littlest one I had when she was a little girl. But she... feisty, always been feisty. She's very stylish. She's my light. She's 1/4 of my heart. I don't like to say was, because I still look for her. Growing up, she was smart. She loved to read. Like I said before, she's very feisty. She the littlest one, but she was her brother's keeper. That was one of her sayings. She is her brother's keeper. And she's just, your darkest days, she would make you smile. She really would. I miss her. She's a mother of six. I really don't know what too much to say about her, because I can say a lot. Shakea, she was my clown. She was my supporter. She was my helper, my cook, my doctor. She was my everything. Everything. She KO weighed what, about 125 at the most. At the most. But yes. But she would give you the world, including her enemies. She would give you anything. She can get into an argument, a fight with you on a Tuesday, and trust and believe on a Thursday, you call her and she's there. She was there. She spoiled everybody's kids. Everybody's. God, that girl was good with kids. She, my only daughter. I have a lot of good memories of Shakea. We call her Kaya. C-A-Y-A, we call her Kaya. So for people that can't pronounce her name, because it's a silent T and they always want to pronounce that T. So Kaya Marie is, she's 1/4 of my light. She was with me every day. Every day. Every day. If I said something she didn't like, she'd go home, but trust and believe. I got a text message. I love you, Mom. I'll see you tomorrow. Or I'd get a call. Every day. Every day. Even when I was at work. Every day. So, Camry was, is my joy.
Yes, I'm Zabre Hardman. I'm Shakea's oldest daughter and her oldest child. Only daughter, actually, out of six kids. My mom, she was my best friend and still is my best friend. Probably one of the most caring people I know other than my grandmother. Everything she did was for us. Everything, all the struggles, everything that happened, my mom always made sure that we were good first. Then obviously my grandma and brothers and everything else. But most of all, I think she loved being a mom. That was her greatest joy. She always talked about her six kids. Six. Even when I wasn't with her or whatever the circumstances may have been, it was still always all six of us. My mom really showed me how to love other people, but also how to not let them walk all over you, how to stand your ground. She taught me how to be a respectable, intelligent woman. Just like she loved reading, I loved reading. I got that from her. Cooking, all of the things my mom enjoyed, she passed down to me. She was also really sweet, did a lot for the community. Even if she didn't have it, she would still help other people out just because she knew that that was the godly way. She was a very, very godly woman. Other people's kids, like my grandma was saying, she had more than six kids if you think about it, because everybody's kids were hers, babies, especially little girls. Oh, if you brought your baby girl around my mom, that was going to be her baby. That she was going to take that baby, that was going to be hers. just a lot of light. Every time she smiled, you could just feel the warmth in the room. When she'd cook and we'd all get to eat, and a little bit before she passed, we watched a bunch of nature documentaries on Disney Plus. The most random thing ever, but we watched so many nature documentaries and Disney movies, and that was my mom's, another one of her favorite thing, watching Disney movies. Princess and the Frog was her favorite movie. Overall, she was just, in my eyes, perfect, but obviously no one's perfect, but to me, she was. It's probably right when I got back from Oregon and we got to see each other again. She came dressed up to me in a big raccoon onesie. And at first I was like, who is that? And then she screamed my name and I was like, oh my gosh. And we just ran into each other's arms and started crying. And she picked me up and told me how much she loved me. And she kissed me and we just hugged for so, so long after not seeing each other for almost 12 years. And that was definitely my favorite memory. As soon as I felt her presence again, it felt like I'd never left. And so, yeah, that was the most amazing thing to experience.
Now that we've heard all about who Shakaya was, let's find out what happened to her.
So, I was in the kitchen cooking. Actually, I had just got through cooking. And everybody had ate. Shakaya and Jabre and Shakaya's friend, Brandon, had left and came back, and they went, Brandon left, and so Shakaya and the kids were in the second bedroom laughing and just joking around, and I was in the kitchen cleaning in the front of the apartment, and so I heard the kids run. And my whole apartment shook, and I have patio windows, and they shook. And I said, what the hell is going on? And all the kids were on the floor, and they was like, somebody's shooting. Then Zaki said, where's mom, her oldest son? Where's mom? And I just pushed everybody out the way and went, I tried to push the door open, but it wouldn't come open at first. And when I looked in, she was laying on the floor behind the door, trying to breathe. She was looking up. And so I looked, and her wrist was open. One of the bullets hit her in her wrist. And all this, like, was open. It was open, and I'm like, Kaya. Then I seen a little blood in her chest. And I grabbed her face and I said, Ma, look at me. Please look at me. Ma, please don't leave me. I called her Ma. I said, Camry, please look at me. Please. And she looked at me and she took a breath. And I said, Ma, please, please don't leave me. Please don't leave me. She took another breath. And when she took her other breath, blood came out her mouth. And then I knew my daughter was gone. I knew she was gone. But I didn't want the boys to see her like that. But he was 17 at the time, Zion. He pushed his way in the room and he just stood there and just looked at her. And I said, get out. Get out, because the little ones tried to come in, and I wouldn't let them come in. And her eyes were to me, but they were black. They were cold. Her eyes was, you could tell there was no life. But I wouldn't leave my baby. Please don't leave me, Ma. Please don't leave me. I can't live without you. Please don't leave me. The paramedics finally came because she called. I called. I had them on the phone when I had dispatch on the phone. And they was like, ma'am, stop yelling. I said, what do you mean stop yelling? My daughter's been shot. What do you mean? Get somebody here. So I say they finally showed up. Finally, and they made me leave her. And they left her. They was there, but they just had her there on the floor. She took her last breath at 9:27. Is when she took her last breath. I lift her shirt and she had a hole. She had a hole in her chest. And she, I say it to this day. I say it all the time. I thank God that I got her last two breaths. I thank God I was the last face that she seen. I thank God that I was there. Because a lot of people aren't there when their kids die. But I thank God I was there. I thank God that she knows she loved. Because that was something we said every day. Every day. Not a day went by that we did not say, I love you. I love you. She know. What bothers me, one of the things that bothers me, one of the things that bring on my depression, is that every single day for 8 months, every single day, I still see her trying to catch her last breath. That does not go away.
I can't imagine the amount of pain that you feel having to witness your daughter take her last breath.
It's hard. It's hard. I tell them, go on her Facebook page, go on her. I just found out she had TikTok, but I tell them, go on her page. She posted a lot of videos. She was every day. She would get up in the mornings before it was time for to get the boys ready for school. She'd sit on the porch with her cigarette and her coffee and listen to her music. One of her favorite songs was Dance With My Father Again by Luther Vandross and How Do You Mend a Broken Heart by Al Green, because her dad had passed. She was with her daddy when he passed. And George been gone, 2 years? So he passed a year before she passed. And so every morning she would get up and she was an early bird. Early. 5:30 she'd get up. And you would hear her playing her music. She'd make a video every morning. She'd make a video taking the kids to school. She would, Camarie was, god dang. Now I say she was making memories for us. She was making sure we had, that she think that we had enough videos and pictures with her voice. A lot of them have, you know, the little over videos and stuff where it masks her voice, but she got videos to where when we get to tripping, we just sit and we can go on her page. As her mother, it's not the same. I'm used to the hugs. I'm used to the kisses. I'm used to her when she wasn't feeling good. Come 38 years old, come lay down with her mama. I'm used to her. Mama braid my hair. Mama scratch my back. And I'm used to, Kaya, I don't feel good. And Kaya, come do this. Kaya, come do that. Ma, I just love you. And she was, like I said, she was my everything. She's mine. No one had the right to take her. She was mine. Everything happens for a reason, but I'm still not understanding. I'm still not understanding. Like I said, she was my clown.
We're going to take a quick break. And we're back. Finally, let's get an update on where the case is.
The night that this happened, and her or her sons was not targeted. We found out that the little boy that was there at my apartment, he was the one that was targeted. My grandson, my oldest grandson, said that they were all in the room and the little boy heard something and he jumped out of the room, didn't say anything to anyone. So when the boys seen him do that, they did it. And when they did it, it was the shooting. And so the police talked to him, released him. He's the one that told us who shot in the house. What kind of car? Everything. He told us. We told the police. They picked him up. They took that little boy. They picked up the one that he said. They picked up the one he said was the driver. They questioned them. The police said the kid that did the shooting, they didn't swab his hands. They didn't do anything. They said he just was sitting there just, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. So they released him. The driver. I wasn't there. I don't know what you're talking about. And the driver was an older guy. They released him. They let everybody go. They had my daughter in that apartment because they said it was a crime scene. So they didn't take her out of the apartment until almost 7 o'clock the next morning. And they let me see her. They wouldn't let the kids or her brother see her, but they let me see her. The little boy started texting my niece. Well, he did this, the other one did this, he's the one shot in there, and he did this, he did that. But then the police came back to pick up the kid again to question him. He had deleted all his messages on his phone. That was between him and the little boy that shot my daughter. So when it first happened, Miss Frances, we're talking to this person, this person, this person. And everybody is giving us the same story because they tried to blame my grandsons for an incident that happened 2 weeks before my daughter got killed, about a fight. But my grandsons, Grandma, we wasn't even in the fight. We were watching other people fight, you know. And so I'm like, okay. So to this day, they're saying, well, you need to talk to your grandsons so your grandsons can help us solve their mom's case. And I'm like, okay, so what makes y'all think that my grandsons wouldn't tell you anything to solve their mother's case? My 19-year-old even went off. He told him. He said, that's just stupid. Why wouldn't I help get the person that killed my mom? We've told y'all, we know who killed her. Y'all know who killed her.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it's not like you didn't tell them what you already knew.
They told me, the lieutenant that's over her case, he told me, we've questioned that kid 7 times, but 7 times y'all let this kid go? All he had to say is that he didn't do it and y'all released him. Even 2 weeks after my daughter left us, this kid shot up my niece's car because my niece stays right next door in the apartments right next door to one of his aunts. And they used to be friends until after this happened. And we started saying, he did it, he did it. We got proof he did it. But yet, no one is trying to turn this kid in.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just think it's important to say this. The police fully have the capability, if they wanted to get a search warrant, even if he deleted those messages, there's still a record of them. They can get that from the phone company.
We told them, y'all can still get all those deleted messages. We're not equipped, is what they tell me. My granddaughter was back and forth at the police station. I'm calling, leaving messages every day. Can you please let me know what's going on with my daughter's case? Can you please let me know? Let me know. Let me know. Did not know after 4.5 months after my daughter left us, they said her case was inactive. I did not find that out until me, my granddaughter, Omari, we went up to the police station, detective office, to speak to the lieutenant. He wouldn't even come out and talk to me. He had me on the little intercom phone. And that's when I found out her case was inactive. So me, I'm like, what do you mean? I even made a video. I went live. What do you mean her case is inactive? I said, my definition of inactive is closed. And he was, well, no, it's not closed, but everybody has lawyered up. Okay, what do you mean everybody's lawyered up? Come to find out, that's a lie. I found out that's a lie.
Even if a suspect lawyers up, that doesn't mean the case stops.
Exactly.
That just changes how they can talk to that person. That doesn't change the fact that they can keep investigating. That doesn't change the fact that they can talk to other people that might have seen something or might have heard something or might have known something. This is...
I was done talking to him. I was pissed. I was livid. So I left there. I went to the newspaper, and I wanted to talk to him, the head writer there. I left there, went to the district attorney's office. She would not even come talk to me. I asked for the victim's unit, and she was talking to me. This is what we can do, but if you give me 3 days, I can call you and let you know what you can do and, you know, who I talked to. That was how many months ago? About 4 months ago. I still haven't heard anything. So I went back, myself, D. Walker, and Josefina Grego. We went back. Josefina made some calls. So we went back up there to speak with someone. And the young lady we had talked to, because it wasn't the same lady, the young lady we had talked to, she was like, Miss Williams, I will find out what I can do, but as of right now, this is what you need to do. So... still haven't. So what got fire under them is that's what we did. When we left the police station, we walked across. I had seen a sheriff. And I asked him, what can I do? And he was like, ma'am, we can't get involved, but you need to go talk to the administration across the street at Municipal. And so we went there and talked to Justin Holwalt. Right after we talked to him, we stayed in there about 2 hours, 2.5 hours talking to him. When we got through talking to him, 30 minutes later, I get a phone call from the lieutenant. If you just give me a little time, we're still working on your daughter's case. And after I talked to him, the chief of police called. He was rude. Chief of Police Ford, he was rude. I even had Josefino listening. And I told him, I said, well, I'm only going by what your lieutenant said about my daughter's case being inactive and everybody lawyered up. So basically they can't talk to anyone. But I've been trying to get him to talk to me for months, for a couple of months now. I said, I don't go in there being disrespectful. I said, the only time I can get any kind of answers is that if I show up unsuspected. That way, can't nobody say they're not in the office, leave a message, or we can't find them. You know, can you come back? None of that. I always just showed up. And I did that once every other week or every other 2 weeks. You know, I was never pushy, never disrespectful, never rude about asking questions about my daughter's case. And like I told them, y'all know who did it. They admitted to knowing who did it. We know who did it. And the last time I talked to the lieutenant was, what, about 2 months ago? And he told me, we know who did it. We just don't have enough witnesses or enough evidence for an arrest.
For my listeners, I just want to reframe this where we're at right now, okay? So this lieutenant is telling you that they don't have enough evidence and they don't have enough witnesses, right? And yes. If you're listening to this, I want you to think back a few minutes to when Ms. Francis was talking about the fact that they never swabbed the hands of the person who might have been responsible. They never even bothered to see if there was any gunpowder residue on his hands. They didn't execute a search warrant. They didn't ask for a phone records search warrant, at least to what we know.
They didn't.
What I'll tell you is I did request the records, and I'm going to give you what they gave me. They gave me 2 pages. Now, they said it's because it was an open investigation still, which that happens sometimes. They don't like to give everything out right away because if they're still trying to prosecute, they don't want to risk that information being out there. So I got one page. I got the incident report, which doesn't say really anything. It doesn't tell me anything. I wasn't surprised by that. You know, if it's a cold case or a closed case, they'll give more information to try to get some answers. But
But you got more than I did because they wouldn't even let me get it.
The lack of evidence that they may or may not have is not because the evidence wasn't there. It's because the evidence wasn't followed. Okay. I just want to make that perfectly clear so anybody who's listening can understand. Like, it's not because there wasn't evidence. It's because they didn't follow the protocol to get the evidence.
Right. And then we gave them, the kid posted a video on New Year's Eve and they tried to delete it, but we got it. My granddaughter and her friends got it. I sent it to Captain Tejas and he gave it to Lieutenant Throne. Every text messages, everything that we could get that they were doing on social media, we tried to get it, and we got some things. I was trying to get my grandkids to understand that if you have a reputation here, because my family, we don't have a good reputation here, you know, but don't judge us and hold my daughter's death accountable to our reputation. Don't do that. My daughter was working. My daughter, everybody has a past, but my daughter corrected her past. I've corrected my past.
I'm just going to jump in again. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Francis, but this is something that comes up repeatedly in my show. People discounting somebody's life because of their past actions. And it doesn't matter what it is. Okay. I've said it over and over and over again, and I'm going to say it again. And listener, I'm sorry if you're sick of hearing it, but every life matters. Yes. And it doesn't matter what they've done, what they've been through, what they've seen, whatever. None of that matters. And nothing justifies an innocent mom losing her life. She had nothing to do with whatever happened. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and there needs to be justice for Kaya. But I want to give you some time to say anything else you want to say and how people can help you.
What I wanted to say was that the boy that killed her, his family is going through torturing us, basically. It's because they're, we had to move out of that apartment because they shot in it again. I have, my friend Josefina has set up a fundraiser. We just asked for peace. We just asked that, you know, just let us get justice for my daughter. My daughter, I don't care what her past was. My daughter was taken from us, and all her kids, myself, my sons, we all have nightmares. Her youngest ones, her two youngest ones, they can see that kid ride by or his family ride by, and then they just run in the house and they tremble. You know, we're always being harassed. But then his stepmother will go to the police and say, we're harassing them. We don't fool with nobody. We stay in our own little hut. So I just want justice. I just want justice. I just want the people, like I said, the police, they know who did it. They won't do anything about it. We was told that he even have a family member on the police force. So it's a lot of things that are going on here in Clovis that they're trying to sweep under the rug. But I'm not going to let my daughter be a cold case. I'm going to get justice for my daughter. And I'm used to saying one way or the other, but no, I want to be able to stand in that courtroom and ask why. Why did you find it necessary to shoot in my apartment and take my daughter from me? Why did you find it so necessary? What was going on so bad to where a kid had to get a gun from an adult to shoot in someone's house, and you knew it was kids there? The kid that killed my daughter, I used to help this kid out. I used to help him out and his stepmother. We know them. We helped them. My grandsons, the little ones, used to spend the night over there. So why was it necessary to shoot in my house and take my daughter? I just want answers. I want answers and I want justice.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.